they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole we found. And I was thinking.
Hi, this is Nico. You're listening to My Dad Rafal, also known as the White Rabbit and James Jordan on the one and only Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Buckle up and enjoy.
Deep into this pool.
Alrighty, alrighty. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are in the world, whatever you're doing. Welcome down the security rabbit hole to yet another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. You've got Raph on the mic and on the camera, and James is off, unfortunately, otherwise disposed. So you've got me and our two wonderful guests. And this episode, we will cover a topic that I think is a quality pain point for a lot of you. I know I've been talking about it with, outside of the podcast, probably for the last 2-3 months. And as conversations are getting much more frequent, that topic, of course, is tools rationalization, tools, security tools specifically, but budgeting tools, controls, all those topics kind of mixed into one. I'm trying to figure out whether you have too little, too many, too much, or just good enough, as Goldilocks once said. So to get us going, let's do a quick round of intros, and I'm going to go We're going to go that way. This means nothing to you, but I'm trying to figure out camera angles. So we're going to go that way. Andrew, you are first, sir. Quick intro.
Hi. Hello there. I'm Andrew Morris, UK and Ireland Practice Director for Application and Cybersecurity for Turnkey Consulting, which means I oversee all things delivery and customer happiness. But I've been in the information and cybersecurity field for nearly 2 decades now, working for a variety of critical infrastructure, FTSE top 5 organizations, and global positions for various companies.
That brings it to you, Tom, returning champion.
I'm not sure if champion after last time, but hi everyone, Tom Venables. I'm the Director of Enterprise Solutions for Turnkey Consulting. Like Andrew, I've got a couple of decades of securing systems from large-scale ERPs down to small ones and trying to rationalize those tools down. So looking forward to the discussion. Thanks, Raph.
Well, cool. Listen, I've been having a lot of conversations since I'm a vendor now, both on the customer side and on the internal side about what's happening in the market at the moment. And I think it's not secret that if you look around, the global economy has had some issues, both apparently where you guys are across the pond and over on this side. I mean, globally, this is a problem. And so as you think about what that means for budgets, right? And look, breaches aren't going to stop. Bad guys aren't going to stop just because the economy sucks and your stock price is down. So what do you do and how do you get budget? How do you continue to operate your team? How do you stay modern? How do you, stay one step ahead or at least not more than 2 steps behind the adversaries and adversaries? I'm starting to talk like you guys, been on the phone with you guys too long. anyway, to cover all that, and let's start with this. I know Andrew, Tom, I know you guys both probably agree with me that we have largely lost track of the number of customers that have said, we have this huge portfolio of cybersecurity tooling, but we're being pressured. We're being pressured to save costs. We're being pressured to minimize our spend. We're being pressured to not spend more. How do you do that? Let's start with just, how do you rationally get your head around that? Where do you start? How do you have that conversation without going, right, well, we're just going to be a little bit weaker next year? Like, where do you go with that? Don't both answer at once though.
Andrew. Yeah. So I think it starts with risk, right? you've got to understand what it is that you're trying to secure, what your attack surface is, what the impact to your business is, and what your likely attack vectors are. So first of all, identify what risk is most likely to impact you, you know, likelihood versus impact. And then take a look at what you've got that is addressing that risk. And you're going to have duplication, especially if you're in a large organization, you know, mergers and acquisitions. If you've just been responding to a breach, you're going to have bought a load of tools to do that panic buying response that we see. But take a look at what is providing the most effective coverage against the most likely threats. Start with that and then identify any gaps. In terms of responding to the squeeze on spend, the big part is you don't necessarily have to save money on licensing tooling. If that tooling isn't duplicating effort and it's addressing your risk effectively, you can recoup that spend with process efficiencies and start to demonstrate return on investment elsewhere. It's not all a technology problem. So, I mean, Andrew, you've been doing this.
Go ahead, Andrew.
I was going to say, one of the first steps, of course, is to make sure you have an accurate list of all the tools and software that you have, right? We know many organizations, they've bought and it's acquired. It's only used by one team. Shadow IT is no different, right? They still purchased it. It's a couple of licenses here for that threat intelligence service we used once when we had that suspicious looking email. Getting that list in place and then starting mapping it out, as Tom said, you know, mapping it to risk, mapping it to functionality, mapping it to controls. What do we actually use this for? Is this a key strategic piece for us? And that's got to be the starting point for me.
How do you, all right, Tom, you said the word risk, so I'm going to pick on you first. This industry has this awful, awful, awful habit of, and this is not necessarily your fault. I'm going to blame you for the time being, though. This industry has an awful time saying, yes, it's all about risk. I'm like, risk of what? Risk to whom? What the hell kind of risk are we even talking about? Can we plant a flag for the future of the conversation as it pertains to risk?
Yeah. So first of all, cybersecurity risk gets treated as an operational level risk, a business interruption, ransomware attack. It's often not tracked at the same level as more strategic risks. So risk management is one of those broad terms that, you know, you could be talking to the board about something very differently to a CISO. And not enough CISOs are represented at board level. But what we're talking about is anything that has a financial impact on the organization, because you're not going to get funding unless you can prove that.
Okay. So hold on. You said the magic words. Okay. So, I worked with a guy that James Christiansen many, many years ago that taught me that there are basically 6-7 different types of risk that that businesses are aware of: strategic, operational, competitive, legal and regulatory, financial, reputational, and health and safety. I didn't hear secure mm-hmm. cyber in there. Do you agree that it doesn't belong, that there doesn't need to be a new one?
Not necessarily, because it plays such a big part in at least 4 of the 7 that you just listed.
Yeah, I agree. Especially
regulatory.
Yeah.
You know, not being able to demonstrate our cybersecurity controls is now, and, you know, upcoming, we've got new SEC regulations, I think 18th of December, on publicly listed companies. The compliance angle is a good one for a CISO because it unlocks funding. But compliance isn't necessarily the same as security, as we know.
Yep, that's right.
Sorry, Andrew.
No, I'm just agreeing passionately.
Yeah. But strategic risk, we can't do a huge amount about. But cybersecurity risk is impacted by strategic risk. So a war in Ukraine means that we see an increase in cyber attacks against companies, right?
The other way. Chain risk, that's right.
Yeah. So cybersecurity is actually part of strategic risk, financial, reputation,
competitive,
and compliance risk.
Health and safety.
Yeah. Competitive risk. Yeah.
If it's not part of health and safety, I don't know what is, right? I mean, I guess it depends on whether you're, you know, a marketing firm or a hospital, although maybe not really. And so, okay. before we digress too far down this, so we are having a rational risk discussion. That's what I wanted to establish, rather than because we have the I've said this a million times on this podcast. We often have this Inigo Montoya problem where we keep saying that word and we do not think it means what we think it means, right? Like we use the word risk interchangeably with others, and it is not okay. And so, yes, this is a legitimate conversation around risk and mapping security technologies and tools you have to try to reduce the problems that we have in other parts of the business. Cool. So that's nice. However, I have also been at that company where they're like, yeah, all those things you have to do, by the way, find a way to cut 20% of your budget. Now what?
So, Andrew, do you want to?
Yeah, he's going to give you the easy one, Andrew.
Yeah, that's where the functionality comes in for me, right? So, yes, you can map it to the risks to minimize the impacts of something occurring. But there's a lot of these tools that have expanded their functionality. Microsoft's a good one. You know, it sees what its competitors are doing, builds it into its own tools. So suddenly, instead of three or four tools, you can possibly get away with one. Now, Microsoft's probably a bad example because the licenses to do that extra functionality are probably going to cost you more than the different tooling. But many of the cybersecurity tools which have been bought, you know, if bought for a specific case, are often over time that functionality is duplicated in others. So for me, it's that functionality mapping, not necessarily at that risk level, but, you know, if we're looking down, I don't know, intrusion detection or prevention, what are the key functionality areas that we need for our business to manage those risks? Which of our tools provide that? Is it a case of this tool provides it now and we're doing it? This tool can do it, we just haven't turned it on. This needs new licenses. And looking at that mapping and seeing where there is overlap and is there a legitimate duplication of effort or tooling?
Okay, so this is one of my absolute favorite topics. And oh, you accidentally got there. I may have led you slightly. Here's what I mean. Listen, we have this for many years, and I am super guilty of this, so I'm sorry to everybody that was involved in my shenanigans. But we have this propensity in security to completely ignore the good enough rule and go for no. I need this separate purchase because this is the perfect tool for monitoring Unix flavor something of this version for this particular use case. Cool. There are endpoint agents, EDR agents that fall into this category, right? We know if you look at EDR, some of them are great on Macs, some of them not so great. Some of them great on Linux. Some of them don't even cover it. Some of them focus exclusively on Windows. Some of them try to peanut butter their way through, right? Spread it equally. Now, if you're saying, boy, this is okay, it's not great on everything, Andrew, what's your philosophy on this? Because this takes me into like the platform conversation. I'm going to try to steer us back away from that because that's a like we don't have 6 hours. But if you're looking at your budget and saying, all right, I've got three tools that technically do the same thing, but in different use cases, how do you have a rational conversation with the people that run it, maybe with yourself, that doesn't devolve into, well, you know what? I just need this. It's just, we just have to deal with it. Like, how do you, and not make yourself feel like you're losing something?
So, first off, any tool, you know, even if it doesn't do 100% of your requirements, is better than nothing, which is always good. But for me, it's trying to use some of that evidence and data. So have you got any threat intelligence that says this is the methods where you might be attacked? Because you could have tools that defend against every single scenario on the planet. But if the people trying to target you typically won't utilize those methods, then you're still, you know, you're putting spend into something of a very extremely low likelihood. And the other aspect, of course, is is anyone using it? You know, you've got all these tools with all these monitoring. This team wants it. They desperately need it. When was the last time they looked at it and configuring it? So, you know, if no one's using the tool, it's sitting there just wasting money.
That's pretty fair. Although I will tell you that there's a but to that. I've had several occasions where there has been tech that gets deployed. It's not meant to be an alert cannon, as my colleagues here like to say. It's not meant to alert you a lot. It's not meant to be super noisy. And you don't have to log into it every day, every week, maybe once a month. So does that decrease its value? And I think the answer is no, right? I think the answer is obviously no. But we have to understand the value something brings, the use case it's attached to, the control set that you're trying to fill. We'll get to that in a second, right? So there's a little complexity to that, isn't there?
There is. Yeah, there's a bit more nuance than I probably, bulldoze my way through there. But yeah, absolutely. It's that match of what's being used. Is what we have good enough? You know, we don't need three things. What's that common functionality? What's more likely to occur and everything else?
Yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
I think you touched on it as well with, the shadow IT problem or the who's spinning those tools up. You need to federate this information, because if it's not all under one umbrella, you don't know what your coverage is. It comes back to mapping that inventory and that we spoke about at the start. You don't know your overlaps. You don't know your duplication until you've got a decent asset inventory, and tying that back to the impacted assets that you're covering, which comes back to the risk discussion. Like, I don't care about that AWS instance if it's not running a critical business process. I obviously need to secure it, but if the impact of it going down is less than my on-premise Windows server stacks that are running my manufacturing, I'm going to secure those first.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's transition this, because we could keep going down this rabbit hole for a bit. If you guys don't mind, I want to bring this back to something I think it's near and dear to your hearts as consultants. Talk to me about this whole like digital transformation thing, because there are lots of companies still going in that direction, right? A lot of customers I've talked to, the bigger companies have done their transformations. They've done take out the manual processes, paper and things that are part of the dinosaur age, but not everybody. And there's tech that was on in the before. There's tech that's valuable in the during, and then there's tech that's valuable in the after. Multi-part question, and you guys can take this as you want. Keeping that in mind, how do you know what to cut as you're going from the from the before to the during? How do you know what to bring on board as you're transitioning to the after? And how do you like manage the during?
Everybody's managing the during at the moment. even the big companies, they're operating these hybrid processes at the moment. As they move to the cloud, we've got companies who they didn't expect to be tech companies when they were founded, and they've grown into operating a lot of their processes on a digital platform now. And unfortunately, security is a little bit of the tail of the dog there. It's like, we need this to run our processes. Oh, yeah, and we'd like it to be secure. So these bolt-ons come along afterwards as part of that digital transformation journey. I think as they operate the hybrid processes, you need to understand what percentage of your business is running through those and the criticality of that percentage. So if you've migrated 70% of your services to cloud providers, and you no longer have to worry about the patching elements of vulnerability management and some of the EDR is handled for you because they operate a SOC as a service or whatever, if that 70% migration is still only 30% of your critical processes that are actually generating revenue for the business, you're going to have a much harder time making a case for investment in them. But you have to understand what that tipping point is. So if you've migrated all of your manufacturing over to cloud-based control, you know, digital networks, but you're still operating on-premise SCADA systems that are extremely vulnerable to attack because you haven't patched them in 20 years, then you still need to be paying attention to what's hitting that part of the network.
Fair enough.
Because you can't patch them because the vendor went out of business 20 years ago. Yeah. But no, I agree.
Valid.
Manufacturing companies are a good example, right? They've got technologies and software, physical machinery, OT devices, PLCs, which have been in production longer than we've been alive, and they've got another 10 years on their life. You can't just, at least, you can't just swap them out. It's replacing entire production lines. Those controls, if they exist, are there for the long haul, right? It's not something you can easily replace. Disruptions there. There's no downtime and all those other challenges. The cloud, as it were, is, in quotes, is far more dynamic. And a lot of those tooling we've seen from customers, it's in response to moving to the cloud. It's like, as you said before, you know, EDR is a mixed bag depending on what platform, what operating system, and wherever else is. You know, companies who suddenly jump to Azure go, you know, Windows Server's cheaper. We need to invest in Windows Defender and everything else and hope it integrates with what they're using on-prem, which might be Unix. That causes a lot of noise and a lot of hassle. And the hope is it's always temporary. It's just transitional, which, as you started with the question. It's just transitional. It's only going to be around for a few years. Oh, wait, we've lost funding to migrate more of the business. We've now got to manage 2, 3, 4 technology stacks. And that transformation, you know, the business then changes its mind what it wants and away you go, start the cycle again.
I have lived that. I didn't want to interrupt you, but I have lived that. I have lived that in one of the largest companies on the planet where we're digitally transitioning the entire company. Oh boy, that's a lot of, okay, we're going to go this part first, this part stage. You're like, wait a minute. You know those cartoons where is it Wile E. Coyote maybe where he's, you know, he's holding on to something and it's suddenly like pulling him apart. And now he's like stretched as far as he'll go. And then people just start walking overhead on his head, like on him, and he's got to hold the thing up. Yeah. Been there. That's unpleasant. So Andrew, maybe we spend a little more time on this. I thought we just kind of transitionally talk through this. This is a big deal though. As you do, there are lots of things to think about in the digital transformation space. You're helping a customer walk through how to get there from here without getting stuck between those two. Is there a particular strategy? Do you have, if somebody says, great, today we are all manual, tomorrow or at some point in the distant future, I want to be a digital business. By the way, we have this old stuff here that's probably going to get phased out, quote, over time. What that really means is as it dies or as we physically retire. How do you have that conversation with somebody that says, yeah, but this is going to, this is called tech debt. It's going to suck on your budget. Because when you talk about tools rationalization, there are costs to, like, the security costs of maintaining something that is legacy keep growing to the point eventually they become overwhelming. Or maybe you can't even, like, there's plenty of systems out there that you can't actually, I think you said it, you can't actually put an agent on, you can't actually protect because the mechanisms don't exist anymore because it's too old.
Yep.
How do you have that conversation?
So probably down in the weeds rather than a high level, possibly for the initial answer. It's functionality for me, right? Ultimately,
okay,
there's different types of technologies, platforms, technology, but what we're trying to do is almost as, you know, is in terms of key functionality features, they're going to be similar or equivalents. And, you know, can all that technology be extended? Does it have that functionality? Can we replace that technological debt with something that covers the new and does a good enough job on the older stuff for us to consider that risk? You know, we've worked with large international organizations. They've got software that's, you know, ERPs that are 10, 15 years old. It's only a read-only copy. We need it after the upgrade, but, you know, it's only around for 6 months and it's hanging around 10, 15 years later, right? The level of controls it needs are still high because it's a critical asset with very critical data in it. But the level of, you know, that fine detail of it needs the state-of-the-art controls probably isn't as much as the actual new production replacement. But we can extend those newer tools back to the older one, and it's good enough for, you know, based on that risk assessment or that functionality in the controls. So for me, I tend to look at more of the functionality, the controls aspect. Can the new be extended to the old or, you know, outright replaced? Or is there just going to be a suck?
I'd just to add to that, I think you mentioned the magic word at the start of your question, Raf. You said strategy. And that's the key to it, is we need to get out of a reactive, oh, we've just bought this new technology, can you help us secure it? And actually be sitting alongside the technology strategists within the organization who are looking at that 5-10 year journey and saying, okay, we want to migrate there. Your security professionals need to be sat alongside your CTO, if you've got one in place, saying, what is this transformation strategy? Where do we need to put our eggs today to be secure in the next 5 years, and slowly reducing that tech debt over time?
Okay. So much to think, so much to keep pulling on there. I do want to do this justice, but I think this digital transformation, we might have to bleed this over into our next conversation, because you're right. Strategy is important, but there's strategy is great until you try to execute and something, some sort of reality check happens, right? Those types of things happen all the time. And sometimes they're beyond our control. Market takes a dive. You end up getting some sort of new regulation passed that you were not anticipating. Other things happen. You know, this stuff happens all the time. Which kind of takes me sideways into the topic I wanted to cover with a couple minutes left here. And I want to give it at least a little bit of airtime. Talk to me about all of this as it relates to controls frameworks, because we have, like, the whole point of having security tools is to have them as controls against risks. Cool. Yeah. Doesn't this conversation get a whole lot easier if we just say, well, you know what, let's figure out, let's draw risks, the controls against those risks, and then tools that support those controls. And where you have multiple tools with certain control, you go, do I need that? To me, that's the as a consultant, that's the strategy I've always used.
Yep.
Is it, yeah. Maybe, is that too simple, guys?
No, it's absolutely the right answer. I think simple is not necessarily how I would describe it. But yeah, you've got control duplication here. You've also got multiple risks addressed by common controls. If you can't identify that compliance framework, you know, if you're dealing with PCI DSS compliance and health and safety compliance, and you need your SOCs and financial controls, and your global financing of terror needs to be proven, etc., those are all going to be addressed by common sets of controls. And if you can map those controls back to a common risk, then you can identify where you've got 6 or 7 solutions that are operating to address that risk. If you can then put control effectiveness scores against those, which is, you know, the holy grail for everybody, then you get to that point where you go, okay, this one's scoring a 70%. I've got one over here that's only scoring 20%.
See, this is why I love having consultants on, because you, like, you guys and I guess me included, I did this for a living for a while. We can divorce ourselves from the emotional attachment that companies build to specific technologies and tools and vendors, and we can look at it and go, right, you've got 4 pieces of tech that support this one control. Okay, I get why this one's here. This is to support your legacy stuff. Why are these two here? Because these like 90% overlap, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And once you have that mapping, that's where you identify that duplication. And we spoke about it right at the start, right? You're going to have gaps because, as you mentioned, there's always tactical things that come along. But the overlap is where the cost is. So having a scoring system, and Andrew, I know you want to jump in here because you've built a couple in your time, is absolutely essential to say this is how effectively I'm addressing that part of my risk.
Yeah, and I was just going to add that that's typically the point where it's like, here's our controls. We've got 7 different systems in there, tools, whatever, managing this control. And that's where you have those, yeah, but we need that one because it's Unix. Yeah, but we need this one because it's Mac. And that's where the real emotions come out, and it's that data alongside some of the other, you know, how likely, how is the control actually scoped to even minimize the threat exploiting a vulnerability and causing a risk, or is it to minimize the impact once it's done? And understanding what type of control it is absolutely as important than looking at the threat intelligence, the effectiveness, just to try and see what is actually needed. Do we actually need 3 things for the same control? Yeah, we do. All right, then we need to find a cost saving elsewhere. We can't. We need to go back around again because I've been there. But yeah, in an ideal world, it's divorced from emotion. It's like, yeah, here's our controls. We're operating these to minimize this risk occurring or minimize the impact. We have 3 things doing the same thing. Back to that functionality mapping. Hey, this other tool we already have can do this for free. We don't need these licenses, but that's a non-emotional take.
So I love that because that's actually the answer, right? That's the secret. It's not a secret, but that's the secret because that is very difficult. I found the concept is relatively simple. That does not require a whole lot of rocket surgery. The part that's difficult is actually executing that with that level of emotional divorce from the like, I brought this vendor in, I really like them, they're great. Oh, it's better for these 2 use cases than that thing. And then if you start with the tools and work backwards into the controls and then into the problem, to me it gets really hard. So
because you're bottom up, right? It's not even that you can't see the wood for the trees, you're down in the weeds when you're operating the controls. You're not looking at what risk those controls are trying to address. And you need to come at it from both sides. You need control specialists to understand what your coverage is, but you need risk specialists to say, are they covering the right areas? And you remind me of a quote that I heard years ago that said, don't cling to a mistake just because you've spent a long time making
it. Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, and I've used that in so many of these meetings saying, I know you've invested in this thing, but it's no longer fit for purpose.
Sunk cost.
We need to stop throwing good money after bad. Yeah.
There's going to be other factors as well, like your service integrator who provides the service, possibly even the tool. They get a kickback from the vendor. They're going to fight tooth and nail to say, this is the best tool for us. But it might not be, you know, it's just because they're the experts. And that's where that training comes in as well, right? If you have 400 different tools, you get a new starter in. You're going to have a lot of onboarding time to learn the different tools, where they sit, what they report into, the integrations of that. Imagine being an architect walking into this and going, where's all my interfaces? Oh, you know, and so reducing that tool set helps in other areas as well, reducing costs. Back at Thomson at the very start, that process level, you can reduce the onboarding time if there's less tools. If there's only one data feed coming in for this particular type of activity, it's easier to do rather than merging 3 different data sets, making sure they're consistent, and then, you know, detecting or threat hunting or whatever you're doing with it. So there's other different savings in there. And especially, is someone else actually own that tool? You know, there's the amount of times as a security in a security team, we've ran, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley tools for the business. It's a business tool. It's a business risk. Should they be funding some of that work and effort? We're managing the risk on their behalf.
Yeah, shared accountability. You know, you mentioned budgets getting squeezed right at the top. Your CISO might only have 50,000 to address a particular problem this year. But the CFO might have an additional 50,000, and the CTO might have an additional 50,000, and your chief risk officer's got their budget. And if you start to pool these resources and say, we have a common accountability and a common responsibility to address this risk, let's pool those resources, deal with it as a common shared goal. You can get more done, and you can also get those efficiency savings in the control operation across the organization.
Yeah.
In theory.
Yeah, there's so much in there. All right. we've got like a nugget of time left. So I've got one more for you. And I know the answer to this, so I'm going to ask it anyway because it's fun. What's the magic number? If I've got 5 employees and security, like what's your – give me a range. Forget magic numbers. Give me a range of like security tech that group can effectively handle without just completely losing it.
Oh, perfect. It depends. Consulting answer here.
Yes. Of course it depends.
Yeah, I mean, there is no one-size-fits-all. It is going to depend on the nature of your business. If you're in manufacturing, you need your production lines running. So you're going to have to spend effort there. It comes back to risk to the organization. But if you're in pharma, it's going to be IP. And again, manufacturing, any system that is controlling those IP systems. But you need to understand your inventory, understand your impacted assets, understand your attack surface, therefore, and understand who's attacking it. That will then give you, okay, we need to secure our email servers because that's always going to be one of the most common attack vectors. We need some sort of telemetry to understand when we're being attacked. And we need something to consolidate that and be able to report that back as a control effectiveness score to those risks. That's where I'd start. Andrew, I mean, it's a tricky one.
I don't think there's one answer. There's only so many hours in the day for people. What are their jobs? What else are they trying to do apart from, they don't want to be managing tooling all day. They actually need to be talking and educating and the other bits and bobs they do. It depends, I think, for me. Again, prioritizing the processes, as Tom said, but it's looking at what the team can practically do because, you might have a fantastic SIEM tool, but you have even no data coming into it because you haven't bought EDR, or, you get a critical alert, but your incident management process, you haven't actually got someone looking at. So the incidents aren't being detected, or if they are, you have no one to respond to them, right? Or you have no tooling there. So a lot of it is going to depend on what is the actual capacity of the team. If no one's looking at these tools, like I said earlier, if no one's looking at these tools, they're not managing risk. Well, they might be, but it's not a black and white answer, but there's a high chance that, if you've got a seam and no one's looking at it, you might as well not have one, unless an incident happens and you want to go back in time.
All right, fine. I lied. One more. And either of you guys can take this or both of you guys can take this. We'll keep it short though. If you look at tool categories, okay? If you look at tool categories, which one's the one you always are like, right, they always have like 20 things in that category. What's the worst offender?
Oof. I actually have two.
Okay. Two then.
Security training is something that I see. And integrating that, I see it run by HR. I see it run by InfoSec. There's different training categories. They don't consolidate that and understand how effectively they're addressing the human element of this. Yeah. So I'd like to see some more consolidation in that space and some actual targeted work and tying it back to testing with, internal phishing campaigns, etc. Yep. The other one I see a lot of duplication on is EDR, but I think that's because I see a lot of digital transformation. And so I'm seeing 6 or 7 solutions governing hybrid estates, firing terabytes of log information at SIEM solutions, and then a lot of effort being expended to try and rationalize that down. Andrew?
For me, data loss prevention. You're looking at databases, so the contents of them, data flows, extraction, classification. The list of tools can be quite endless. Inside your network, going outside your network, SaaS tools, it can quickly move into like an absolute rat's nest of software just to see who's sending an email and what they're doing with the attachment when they save it to their OneDrive, or whatever. So DLP for me, you've got to be clear on what you're trying to do. Otherwise, there's hundreds of tools.
All right. And last but not least, Tom, can you give us a wide shot of that background? That is so cool.
So that's our mural that we did for our 10-year anniversary. There's a lot of little stories about the company on there. So it looks like a fake background, but it actually sat in front of them.
That is super cool. All right, folks, that hopefully was informative. I know we covered a lot of ground, but we started wide, we narrowed, we went back wide, we narrowed, we went back wide, and I think right here is where a great place to end, because we have focused. If you forget everything else, my one nugget of takeaway, and I'll let you guys give me your takeaway out of this. I'll go first so you can think a little bit. My one nugget of takeaway is, when you're looking at rationalizing your technology, start with the business side as you go to three tiers. Start with the business objective or the business risk. Jury's out on which one's better. Go to map that to the controls, then go into your tools. Don't go the other way, because if you're going the other way, it's gonna end up a mess. That's my takeaway. Who wants to go next?
I would have just, similar to you, just worded differently. Try to understand what you're actually trying to achieve with your tools.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I'd say you don't just pay attention to the technology. It's going to help you address these risks, but understand the processes that you're operating and how the technology supports them.
Well said. All right, that's it. Episode done. I think my coffee's empty, and that means it's time to end the show. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. It's been great having you. And I'm going to have you back. We're going to perhaps pick this conversation up, or maybe start a different one. I love the consultant's perspective. It's always fun. What you guys do is near and dear to my heart. That's where I started. That's where I live mentally anyway. So, all right, folks, as always, welcome your thoughts, conversation, comments, concerns, and unsolicited feedback. You're welcome to recommend guests that you'd like to have on the show. I don't do this just for myself. I do rather enjoy this, but I record it so you can listen and get some benefit out of it. So feel free to recommend people that we should have on the show. We get by your reviews on the various places that you listen to podcasts from, Apple Podcasts and Spotify and I don't know, Amazon and Chartable and all these other places that people can get podcasts from. So leave us a comment, leave us a review, check out the YouTube channel. Please subscribe on the LinkedIn page. It's kind of where I give you the most updates. And for now, it's goodbye. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us. And I guess that means cue that new music, same music, new outro. We'll catch you guys another time, another place, on another Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast.
This is Bella. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to leave my dad a review and share this with your friends. Bye.